Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 5th of October, recording at 5:48 p.m., and that's British Summer Time. It's also a lot earlier than I usually record, although there's certainly plenty to talk about. But I'm recording earlier because, as I mentioned last night, I have a function this evening. Now, this being Friday, this is a big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, but first let's have a quick review of the week. In stock markets, China's A shares were closed, but the other markets have all been quite steady, particularly the ASEAN sector. And today, both Indonesia and also Singapore followed Thailand, Malaysia and the Philippines into new high ground after lengthy ranging periods. Now, in Europe, we had a solid performance in here today, notably the Italian MIB index up 2.35% and the Spanish IBEX up 1.81%, and solid gains all around. The FTSE 100 was up 0.74%. In the Americas, which are still trading, of course, we have a modest rally of 0.4% on the S&P currently, a little less on the NASDAQ, a little bit more on the Dow. And the action here this week has been steady. Overall, and we've got the S&P right up near its highs of the year, but the albeit within a range, and the NASDAQ is a little lower. I should have also mentioned that the European markets have been edging upwards for most of this week, following an earlier reaction from their highs. Now, in long-dated government bond prices, very interesting here because we've seen some clear cracks in the rally, particularly by the U.S. long-dated bonds, which are down another point here today. They had a moderate downward dynamic yesterday, and they're getting downside follow-through in here today. The U.S. dollar overall has been quite weak, and the only currency really that I know of that's been weaker than the dollar this week has been the yen, because the greenback has edged up against the yen. The Australian dollar's been soft generally. It's at 102.09 following that interest rate cut and concern over the Chinese economy, which is such an important export market for Australia. The Asian currencies generally, though, have been quite firm, not least India. Incidentally, India had a flash crash in here today, and that's my lead story and comment of the day. More on that in a moment. And precious metals, they've had a pretty good week, although there's some profit-taking setting in here today. The moves to the upside have been led by palladium. Gold has been very steady. We've seen new rally highs by platinum. Did I say the move to the upside been led by palladium? No, it's been led by platinum, I meant. And platinum has seen a new high yesterday and today for the very early today. For this move, which really began in mid-August. And gold and silver yesterday both hit new recovery highs on this move. Today, though, we're seeing a bit of profit-taking. And as I speak, palladium's down 11, silver's down, that's $11 at $16.63, silver's down 35 cents to 34.74, still range bound there, and gold bullion is currently trading at 1781 and change. That's down $9. And we have, after a look at, got up to 1796, I see, early this morning. And what else to mention? Crude oil. Crude oil really has been volatile this week. It had fallen sharply on increased U.S. reserves on Wednesday. It rallied sharply yesterday, and it's down today with the WTI down $2 as I speak at 89.71, and the COMEX is down 143 at 111.16. Within the grain and bean complex, we've had a little bit of steadying by corn and soybeans. They're down a little bit. Well, no, soybeans are up a little bit here today, but less drama here recently. And industrial metals overall on the firmer side, but albeit within consolidations. Okay, so what's going on here? Well, the main story is, of course, all the quantitative easing. And that is being led, of course, by the US Federal Reserve, with the ECB packing in very strongly, and with the Bank of Japan stating that that's what it's going to do. But you can never be sure with the Bank of Japan. And there's some tension going on there for sure, so which I've often mentioned, between the head of the Bank of Japan, Mr. Shirakawa, I believe, and the Japanese government and Japanese industry. So, but at least there is promised QE, and I think it's Mr. Shinawatra, and his term actually ends in April of next year, and you can bet that he'll be replaced by a neo-Keynesian rather than a neo-Austrian. And that's the main story. And also China is upping its reflation overall. China's been closed all week, as I mentioned before, but it'll be interesting to see how they respond to a little bit more soft economic data. Of course, the economic data that's being reported is historical, whereas more recently we have seen increases in the stimulative measures. Now, also, technically, stock markets have been consolidating after a very strong move, which began in early June. Characterized by a series of higher reaction lows for the S&P, for most of the European indices, for the Nasdaq, and a very strong rally. And then the ASEAN sector, which had underperformed for a while. I think the Chinese leash effect was a factor there, but the underperformance was largely in the form of a sideways ranging pattern overall. And you'll know from what I said in the introduction review that those markets have now all broken to new high ground overall. So that's a very strong performance. I think that they're anticipating probably a favorable reaction by China's A shares next week, and there could be some disappointment if China disappoints. So China's given as the world's second largest economy, is certainly going to cast a longish shadow overall, certainly across regional markets, and beyond even. Now, my feeling is, though, that we probably will see Well, I'm certain it will see a stronger recovery by Japan. Whether it comes sooner rather than later is the question mark. My guess is that it'll come sooner, but the charts will show us, obviously. And next week will be important in terms of investor sentiment, I feel. Now, the rallies that we've actually seen in the West, particularly in Europe, they were led by Europe, and albeit from very low levels. And if we move into a deeper corrective phase, we'll almost certainly see it first in Europe. So I'd keep a close eye on those indices, particularly the Euro Stoxx Index and the Euro Stoxx Banks Index, and also on the indices for the Spanish IBEX and the Spanish MIB. They would be the ones in that if another corrective phase does occur sooner rather than later, they're the ones that would provide the lead to the downside. But they're not that difficult to work with here in the short term, because having seen a moderate pullback of perhaps about a fifth of the strong rally that we'd seen, they have steadied up once again, and therefore we have some reaction lows, which either this week's reaction lows or last week's reaction lows, whichever are lower, we would need to see moves below those reaction lows. Closes below those reaction lows, and if that takes place, that would be a little bit of a caution signal generally, that sentiment was not all that optimistic. And as I've said on a number of audios, we've had Mario Draghi, the ECB president's strong leadership here as lender of last resort. This is created more confidence in the region among investors, but he probably doesn't have any more short-term rabbits to pull out of the hat, and it's now over to the governments. What are they actually going to do? How much success will they have in reducing their budget deficits? And that means cutting back on entitlements, it means raising taxes, and it means demonstrators out on the streets. And so that can spook investors if it persists for too long, let alone turns nasty. So although Europe's strength has been a key factor, perhaps the key factor in the strength of the rally, along with the QE packages announced by the US and Europe. But so often was the case last year and earlier this year, Europe was the focal point of global investor concerns, and therefore it will likely continue to signal, well, if it continues to signal an all clear, all's well, that's one worry that we can postpone. But if we do start to see a little bit of erosion in those markets, that could spread to others and lead to a somewhat bigger reaction and corrective phase. Now, I think the level to watch on the S&P is at 1440. Right now, the S&P, as I said, is firm. It's up at 1466. And if it were to go below, close below the 1440 for more than a day or so, it would be breaking the progression of higher reaction lows. And that would represent the first deterioration of that type since the June low overall. So that would also unsettle investors somewhat. So all those reaction lows that we've seen recently need to be watched, and those includes the U.S. indices and also the European stock market indices. But overall, the background of plentiful QE, which we've never seen before in our lifetimes, and the ultra-low interest rates that we still have is a tailwind for equities generally. It has the rally that we've seen since June has led to some valuation expansion. In other words, shares have been moving up faster than valuations have actually been improving. But shares were, for the most part, reasonably cheap before this actually happened. So that bullish tailwind is still very much there, and moreover, it's likely to be there for quite some time, although the short-term impact of that recognition has been discounted to a reasonably considerable extent overall. Now, long-dated government, but let's carry forward on this outlook. I think most expectations are for modest growth in 2013, but modestly improving growth overall. There's so many uncertainties to get past, not least the U.S. election. And the ECB, though, is among the cheerleaders in terms of expecting some return to growth next year. And that would be a good underpinnings for the stock markets. Stock markets historically tend to do quite well when we have periods of relatively slow growth, provided it's not still deteriorating overall. When stock markets tend to suffer is when growth is overheating, and we certainly don't see that anywhere right now. And of course, that's a problem because that causes central banks to rein in money supply quite sharply. Now, the favorite sectors for us still are the dividend aristocrat type shares and also the successful global autonomies. What's a successful global autonomy? Well, it's one that's trading to the left, or I should say above, its rising 200-day moving average overall, and there are a fair number of them. And I'm sure Owen will be resuming some of his reviews of various sectors when he gets back on Monday. Long-dated government bond prices. I mentioned that we've seen a crack now in the uptrends that had taken place, and that means that we have a lower high, it looks like. If we were to see another lower low, in other words, take out the lows that we saw, I think it was last month, or late August, whichever time period that last reaction low occurred, that would provide additional evidence that bond prices were in an overall topping out process. In other words, that we would the car the flip side of that, the inverse mirror image, would be rising lows, gradually rising lows for the long-dated government bond yields, indicating that they were also in a bottoming out process. I think that's what's happening. What I don't know is how long it will take, but it would probably be best to bank on a fairly lengthy process overall. We've often seen that in the past, and with all the QE and the slow growth, that would suggest that it will be a lengthy process overall. Although there is another factor, because of all this unprecedented QE, nobody knows quite how all this is going to play out. But the strong hunch is that it will end in some sort of inflationary problems, because what these central banks are fighting most of all are the deflationary pressures. And I think they've probably done it early enough, or started doing it early enough, and are doing it sufficiently vigorously to win that battle. Now, when will that inflation flare up again? Well, the indicator to watch for that will be money velocity, and that's something you can follow in the chart library. In other words, if the money that's being created is just sitting mostly in bank accounts, If the banks themselves are handing it back and depositing it with their central banks, and if consumers and businesses are relatively cautious, then you're not going to have much wage price inflation. That's for sure. And most inflationary pressures will be kept under wraps. Unfortunately, what we do see is food price inflation, and more on that in a moment. We also see inflation in the cost of many government services and all the things that you have to pay for on a daily, weekly, or monthly basis, as I've mentioned before. Unfortunately, that's where we see the inflation pressures. But I'm talking about the risk of an eventual inflation which drives those long-dated government bond yields up higher. It's going to happen. It's inevitable that it's going to happen, as inevitable as anything can be in markets, because we are down here at historic lows, and unless we all believed that the world was going to end, as it begins to strengthen, as that money velocity picks up, as the global economy begins to strengthen, we will see those interest rates push up, and we will certainly also see, I believe, the inflationary pressures beginning to push up. And how central banks actually extricate themselves from all this QE without causing havoc is one of the great unwritten and as yet untold stories of the 21st century. Now, in terms of currencies, the Fed clearly wants to keep the US dollar soft. The ECB will probably be less concerned about that because euro is already reasonably soft. And you've got the Bundesbank there, which is a sop to the Bundesbank. The ECB might allow the euro to rally up a little bit further than it might actually wish for overall. But probably what the ECB is most concerned about is just the business activity that takes place within the Eurozone, and for that the euro would not be a huge influence. And Germany is the biggest exporter, has proved that it can export in almost any kind of environment, provided there's, or can remain competitive in almost any kind of environment for the currency, provided there's enough demand occurring outside the European area itself. So I think the Fed will succeed in keeping the dollar soft generally. I don't see any reason why the dollar needs to go into a tailspin anytime soon. I don't think that's likely. I think the dollar might be a little firmer under a President Romney, but we'll see whether or not that actually happens. And I think the Bank of England will be keen to keep the pound from appreciating too much against the greenback or its other main trade partners within Europe. The wild card in all this is Japan, because I've mentioned that the head of the Bank of Japan has certainly not been fully on board as a neo-Keynesian, the way Bernanke has, and the way Mario Draghi appears to be behaving. But I think there is a strong case for a weaker Japan, I beg your pardon, a weaker yen, to help to support Japan's exporters overall. And that argument will win out, I believe, over time. So these OECD currencies are not going to be all that strong. Well, what will be the strong currencies? Probably a number of the Asian currencies. We've got very firm ASEAN currencies right now. And if Prime Minister Singh of India is able to continue with his minority government, which could be voted down at any time, but they may hold off and wait to see, because these measures are certainly popular for some, not least international investors. And that's led to a flood of FDI money moving into India, and it's strengthened the rupee rather considerably. It's hard to make long-term forecasts on the rupee, but the commodity exporting currencies are the commodity exporting countries, rather. I would expect their currencies to be reasonably firm as and when growth picks up in 2013 or 2014. As for precious metals, they've been very, very firm. They've done everything that one could ask for them to do in terms of confirming my hypothesis that they had indeed reached a floor within that lengthy medium-term correction that began really for silver in April of last year and for gold in September of last year. So I feel we're most definitely in a new accumulation phase overall. They're still in choppy ranges here right now because of some historic resistance in this region, and I'm referring there to the $1,800 level for gold and the $1,700 region for platinum, the $700 region for palladium, and the $35 region for silver. So we may see these bounce around a little bit more, and they are softer in here today, as I mentioned, after yesterday's good gains overall. But QE could not be a bigger bull story for the precious metals, in my opinion. And therefore, their appeal as monetary assets, hard money, really continues to grow. And I think that that will fuel significant gains over the next 15 months. But let's take it one step at a time. Gold as the psychological leader here overall, although it doesn't always lead, of course. But the next technical development that would reconfirm my hypothesis is to see gold break above the $1,800 level and hold that move. Now, if it's able to do that, hold it, and I mean to hold it for more than a few days, if it's able to do that, to break up and consolidate above 1800, extending its upward trend, then it won't be long before plenty of other people start piling in once again, and they will consist of those people who have been waiting for a pullback to buy, and if the market's moving away from them, they will move their orders up, and it may also include some additional short covering on the part of those commercials that some of the data firms are pointing out. So I think that is going to happen. It could happen next week, or it could be delayed for several more weeks, depending on what happens to stock markets. I think that's a key influence, and because we still get quite a high correlation here between the precious metals and stock markets overall. That would always be the case, but it certainly is the case here right now, and it's working on an almost tit-for-tat sort of knee-jerk basis. But still very much a bull story, consolidating the initial strong moves, and kind of repeat my forecast there. I think we'll see prices move considerably higher over the medium term, and I've describe that as the next 15 months or so. Eventually, this gold bull market will end, and I think it will be higher interest rates that eventually choke it off. But I would not be surprised if prices go a whole lot higher before that happens. And there's also the possibility that we may eventually see sometime in the next few years a mania phase, but there's no evidence of that at this stage. Now, I mentioned the food price inflation. This is a real concern because really more volatile climatic conditions have played havoc with crops, as you know. A lot of these staple foods are in short supply, mainly corn, soybeans, and to a lesser extent wheat. Fortunately, that is not the case with rough rice, and that would be very, very serious if we were to see some significant failures in rice crops over the next 12 months or more. Hopefully that does not happen, we do not have, worldwide, we do not have the cover of really good crops. Now, the crops that are being sown now that are very important will be the South American ones, not least in Argentina and Brazil. Conditions are reasonably favorable at the moment, but as you know, it's a long way between the sowing season, and we haven't even reached the sowing season for all these, for all the corn and soybeans. Can take quite a, well, there are a lot of hazards that they have to contend with before a successful harvest is brought in. But hopefully we'll get some good crops. There won't be anything really significant coming from the U.S. now until the spring planting season recommences overall. But conditions, needless to say, are very tight. That has a knock-on effect throughout the food chain overall. It will be a small miracle if we get through the next 12 months without some food riots somewhere, and this creates problems particularly in poor developing countries, and not least in the Middle East, which doesn't produce and which is unable to produce enough of its own food due to the often to the desertification. And industrial metals, if I can go from the agricultural back to the industrial metals, Owen and I are convinced that the lows are in for that cycle, but psychologically, in terms of investor and producer and consumer interest, they're closely allied to what actually happens in China. I think China will pick up. China will not be the voracious consumer of all the industrial commodities that it has been in recent years, but there are plenty of other countries that need infrastructure build or rebuild. As a matter of fact, it's very difficult to think of one that doesn't. So we can expect plenty of demand here overall, and I think the market often being a lead indicator is bottoming out and starting to head up ahead of that next global recovery, which is not going to start with the sprint out of the blocks, but should slowly emerge, hopefully next year, and in 2014, if not. And I think that's pretty much covered all the bases that I wanted to touch on here with you. So I'll just say, have a fabulous weekend. All the best.